Okay, good evening, everyone. First of all, I first want to thank Dr. Oppenheimer and his partner in crime, Dr. Goldenberg, for this incredible initiative that he's allowed me to participate in. I didn't realize that he was going to get me in the rotation so quickly, but it was a good mechayev for me to prepare a little bit of iyun. And for another 2 weeks, at least, all the Torah that I say over is Leilu Nishmas, my father, whose yahrzeit is in less than 2 weeks in Mirtz Hashem. So all the Torah that we share together is Leilu Nishmas, Avi Mori, Shimon Yaakov, Ben Avram, Shlomo HaKohen. The fascinating Mishnah, Daf Lamed Amud Beis. I'm from the tribe, so these Mishnahs are particularly close to my heart. The Mishnah says as follows, Rishon HaYimakabim Ne'idus HaChodesh Kol Hayom. Now, initially, this could be talking about Rosh Chodesh, but as Rashi mentions very clearly, it's referring here to Rosh Hashanah, that originally they allowed the Sanhedrin, where Makabel, Edom, witnesses, to testify about the new moon the entire day. Pam achas mishtah ha'edim milavo. One Rosh Hashanah came, and the Edom were delayed in coming. V'niskalpul ha'levim b'shir. And what happened was they had passed already the Tamid Shalbein Harbaim, the afternoon Tamid that's brought every single day. And so the Levim sang the daily, regular weekday shir for the Tamid Shalbein Harbaim, that karban. And then the Edim came. They missed out on saying the shir shal yom of Rosh Hashanah. They got all mixed up, and they didn't know what to do. So from that point on, hiskinu shaloy makabalin el ana mincha. From that point on, the Sanhedrin would no longer accept Edim's testimony from Edim about that particular day. The deadline would be mincha, or the korban Tamid Shalbein Harbaim. Once that came, then even though it would be Makabal Yedus, they would celebrate today, as the Mishnah says, Hayom Kodesh, Naga Osa Hayom Kodesh, Lamacha Kodesh, they would celebrate the remainder of that day as Rosh Hashanah, and they would celebrate the following day, Rosh Hashanah as well, so that the Levim could sing the Shir Shal Yom, etc. And that was all during the time, says the Mishnah, when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence. However, like the previous Mishnah, Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and there was no longer of a concern, fortunately, Bavanosein HaRabin, because of our iniquities, we no longer had a Beis HaMikdash to do the Avodin, the Levim could no longer sing the Shir Shal Yom, since that was no longer a concern, his skin Rabbi Yochanan and Zakash, and the Zachodesh Kol Hayom. They were Makabel, they accepted the Edim all day long, because there was no longer a concern. Tosvos, which I posted in the WhatsApp group, asks a fantastic question, which requires a little bit of background. The halacha is, during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that the deadline for bringing the last karban was the karban Tamid Shalbein Harbaim. It was not permissible to bring any more karbanos after that Tamid Shalbein Harbaim in the afternoon time. Once that time passed, and once the karban was brought, it was prohibited to bring any more karbanos. Says Tosos, I don't understand. Why doesn't the Mishnah mention a different concern in addition to the Levim not being able to sing the appropriate shir? Why not be concerned about the fact that if these Edim delay and they don't come till after the Korban Tavos Shalbein Harbayim, the Jewish people can't bring the Korban Musaf for Rosh Hashanah? Right here, these Edim are going to come. They're going to come at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The Korban Tavos Shalbein Harbayim is brought. Now it's Rosh Hashanah. They want to bring the Korban Musaf because now it's Rosh Hashanah for another couple of hours. And guess what? They can't bring it because the Korban Tamid Shalbein Harbaim was brought. How come the Mishnah did not articulate, didn't inquire, didn't share that concern? Why are they only concerned about the delay of the Shir Shal Yom? So far, so good? Good. So Tosvos borrows a concept from a Gemara in Brachos, from a Gemara in Gittin, and Tosvos explains that the Mishnah was not concerned about missing out on the Korban Musaf. You know why? Because they still were permitted to bring the Korban Musaf. Stephen saying to himself, I don't understand. You just told me 2 seconds ago, you can't bring a Korban after the Korban Tamid Shalbein Harbaim. What do you mean you're allowed to bring the Korban Musaf? Says Tosvos, mitzvah derabim shiny. When it comes to communal types of mitzvos, we push away when it would be otherwise prohibited to be doing something. Like in this case, you would never be allowed to bring a individual korban after the korban tamid shalbein harbaim in that afternoon. However, the korban musaf is a communal sacrifice. Communal types of mitzvos can push off things that are prohibited. And so therefore, even if the Edom would have come after the korban tamid shalbein harbaim, while they will be able to bring the Korban Musaf because it's a communal sacrifice, they still would not be able to sing that new Shir Shal Yom, and that's why the Mishnah was only concerned about the Shir Shal Yom, that you're going to be messed up upon, but you're not going to have to worry about the Korban Musaf. So I thought, based on this Tosos, it would be interesting to look at where Tosos borrows this concept from. Because after all, if you look at the Gemara doesn't mention anything about mitzvah derabim shiny, that communal mitzvahs are different. He borrows that concept from other places in Shas, that it might be worthwhile for us to examine just for a few moments where it comes from, and perhaps to circle back around to our Gemara to see and compare and contrast. So the Gemara...
Is Korban Pesach an example of that? The Korban Pesach we brought after the
Talmud. Well, we bring the Korban Pesach earlier in the day because if you don't, if you start till then, the Kohanim aren't going to be able to have any time to be able to do it anymore. I think that's a circumstantial, not necessarily halachic. But actually, hold off on your question because it might come back to us in a moment. So where is this concept of mitzvah derabim shiny, this concept that there are certain circumstances in which a communal mitzvah can push off something that otherwise would be prohibited? So the Gemara in Brachos, on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, records a very, very famous story of Rebbe Lazar. Rebbe Lazar was a minyan goer, and he went to his shul, and there was only 9 of them. He didn't know what to do, so he pulled something out of his back pocket, one of his avadim kenanim, his Canaanite slaves. We know there are two types of avadim in the Torah. There's an eved ivri, which really isn't a slave, it's more of an employee, right? We even have to treat the eved ivri better than we even treat ourselves. And an eved kenani, which is a non-Jewish slave, can be considered property, and he does belong to us. And the halacha is that if you free a Canaanite slave, he automatically becomes a full-fledged Jew. Says Rebbe Lazar, I've got a slave at home. We need a tenth for a minion. Hold on, guys. He runs home. He gets his slave. He frees him. Now you've got your 10. Yesh minion. Says the Gemara, how is he allowed to do that? What's the problem? The problem is that we have a prohibition, a biblical prohibition of li'olam bahem tavodu. You are not allowed to free your Eved Kanani. It's prohibited. Midoraisa. If you had an Eved Kanani today, you'd be violating the Midoraisa of freeing your slave. So how could Rebbe Lazar, for having tefillah, be able to violate an Issur Midoraisa of freeing his slave? What gave him the right to be able to do so? So the Gemara says, mitzvah shiny. Oh, mitzvahs are different. But then Gemara says, hold on, you and I both know, mitzvah ba'avera. You're not allowed to do a mitzvah if it's going to be predicated on having first do an Avera. Here, Rebbe Lazar is going to free his slave, which is an Avera, in order to do mitzvah. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to steal a lulav and shake a lulav. You're not allowed to free your slave, which is in violation of lolem b'am tavodu, in order to be able to have a minion. So then the Gemara pulls the concept, mitzvah derabim shiny, tefillah b'tzibur is a public, is a communal type mitzvah. Lolem b'am tavodu is not. And so therefore, mitzvah derabim shani, this communal mitzvah of tefillah b'tzibur will override the prohibition of freeing your slave. And that's where Tosos, see, by the way, same Gemara is quoted in Gittin Daf Lamed Ches, that's where Tosos gets this principle, this concept of communal mitzvahs being able to override at times other prohibitions that are mentioned in the Torah. Before I highlight or raise the obvious difficulty, I actually saw something very interesting in terms of defining what exactly is a mitzvah derabim. In other words, if I were to ask all of you in this room what you would consider a mitzvah derabim, I would assume, if I had more than 15 minutes, I throw it out to the crowd, that's my normal style, but I'm going to get to the point, I would assume that most of us would say that a mitzvah derabim means any mitzvah where the rabim is essential in fulfilling the mitzvah. Right? Korban Musaf, the rabim, the public, the community, is essential. Without it, you cannot fulfill the mitzvah. Tefillah b'tzibur is essential, right? You need the 10 people in order to fulfill the mitzvah. That's what I would have assumed, and probably if I took a poll, most of us would have defined a mitzvah derabim, the uniqueness of these communal mitzvahs, are mitzvahs that in order to fulfill them, you need a community to participate. But I actually saw in the back of the Masifta Gemara, a chakira, a multi-dimensional, multi-perspective of defining this mitzvah, in which he gives an alternative perspective or an alternative definition that changes everything we think about when it comes to mitzvahs. And he says, you want to know what mitzvah derabim means? What's a mitzvah derabim? Any mitzvah that derabim, even as individuals, are obligated in. Think about what that means for a minute. It means that it's possible to suggest, let's stick to men for a moment, that the derabim are obligated in the mitzvah of lulav, right? Could be, you could come up with a circumstance where the mitzvah lua, because it's a mitzvah derabim, is going to be doch, is going to push off other isurei d'oraisa. Right? That's shocking, right? We always like to say that maybe there's this like small category, right? Korban Musaf, tefillah b'tzibur, those are unique mitzvos that are public type of mitzvos. But mitzvos that we all happen to be obligated on, but independently, that wouldn't be considered a mitzvah derabim. Yet, there's this interesting suggestion that maybe there's another way to define mitzvah derabim, which means it's not only what the community is required to participate in, but as long as the community as a whole is obligated, even if individuals are going to be required to fulfill it on their own, that too is going to be considered a mitzvah derabim. In fact, the back of the Gemara even wants to suggest that maybe that's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. I saw Rashi, I don't say how he reasoned in the Tosfos, but I thought it was an interesting alternative way of defining it. Coming back to our Gemara, we've got a big problem. Why do we have a big problem? Because let's compare the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, where it says mitzvah derabim, at least according to Tosfos interprets it, and the way the Gemara Brachos employs this concept of mitzvah derabim. Rosh Hashanah, the prohibition of sacrificing something after the Tamid Shalbein Harbayim is a biblical prohibition. We got a problem. But it's okay, you know why? Because the mitzvah of Korban Musaf is also a de'oraisa obligation. So here you have no sacrificing after the Tamid Shalbein Harbayim. You have your Musaf. Which one is going to win out? Oh, you know what? Mitzvah derabim shiny. It's a communal thing. Boom. I was going to say trumps it, but right now not a good time for me to mention his name. So that's an easy, more palatable thing to accept. You have one d'oraisa, a biblical prohibition, versus an obligation that is biblical. They go hand in hand, they go against each other. You throw this additional element of, well, since it's public, since it's communal, it'll knock it down, and that's why you're allowed to bring the Korban Musaf. But if you look at the Gemara in Brachos, let's think about this for a second. The Gemara concludes, and the Gemara, no one disagrees with the conclusion of the Gemara, that Tfilah B'Tzibur is going to override the prohibition of freeing your Canaanite slave. What level is Tfilah B'Tzibur? Is that a De'oraisa obligation or a De'rabbanan obligation? De'rabbanan. So let's think about this for a second. The concept Tosos is borrowing from seems to be a little bit difficult to understand. How can Tfilah B'Tzibur, how could Rabbi Eliezer have thought that Tfilah B'Tzibur, which is De'rabbanan, yeah, it's a mitzvah derabim, that's fantastic, but a derabbanan is going to override the de'oraisa of l'olam hem tavodu, doesn't really sit well, right? So how are we to understand this? So there's a number of different answers that the Rishonim give. I'm just going to give you two. I would like to give multiple ones in case you don't like the first one, Rotem. You can always, sink your teeth at the second one. The first one is in the name of the Rosh. Rabbeinu Asher, one of the integral personalities of our Ashkenazi Mesorah. Rabbeinu Asher, the father of the Tur. The Tur, who was the originator of the original Shulchan Aruch before Rav Yosef Cairo took it and took it to the next level. So the Rosh explains that if you think about what Tefillah B'Tzibur is all about, it's not as difficult to understand. What is Tefillah B'Tzibur? So Tefillah B'Tzibur really distinguishes itself in terms of the actions of Dvarim Shebekdusha, Baruch Hu, Kaddish, Kedusha. All of those actions are based off one idea, and that is Kiddush Shem Shamayim Barabim, publicizing the sanctity of God's name. That, says the Rosh, is biblical. There's a biblical obligation to be Mekadosh Shem Shamayim Barabim. We have to sanctify Hashem's name publicly as many opportunities as they lay before us. And so says the Rosh, although the way in which we manifest itself, right, the way we manifest that Kiddush Barabim, which is through the Rabbanans of Tefillah, nevertheless, the what we ultimately fulfill is a d'oraisa. We're fulfilling the biblical obligation of Kiddush Shem Shamayim Barabim. And so says the Rosh, Rebbe Elazar was well within his right. He wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Barabim, Kiddush Hashem Barabim, which is a d'oraisa. And he had the mitzvah derabim shiny, was a public type of Kiddush Hashem Barabim. And so those two things, now it's a d'oraisa with the mitzvah derabim, will override the prohibition of freeing a non-Jewish slave. That's the Rosh's interpretation. The Ramban, not here, but in Gittin, on Daf Lamed Ches, gives it actually two different suggestions, and I'll share both of them with you. The first one is understanding what is the basis for the prohibition of freeing a Canaanite slave. What is it just Stam, we don't free Canaanite slaves, or is there something deeper that's going on over here? So the Ramban, I believe the Ritva as well, or the Rashba, quotes that the prohibition of freeing a Canaanite slave is based off of the idea of a different Issur D'oraisa of Lo Sichanim. There is a prohibition, it may not be the most politically correct prohibition, but nevertheless it is a prohibition of giving what we call free gifts to non-Jews. We're not allowed to do that. Not allowed to give free gifts to non-Jews. And so therefore, since you're not allowed to give free gifts to non-Jews, the greatest gift you can give any human being is their freedom. And so therefore, lo'olam hem tavodu is predicated off of that principle of lo sechanim, and so therefore we can't free our Canaanite slaves because we'd be in violation of giving a free gift to a non-Jew. Says the Ramban, what did Rabbi Elazar do? He wasn't freeing that guy for free. Why was he freeing him? He wanted a minyan. That's not free anymore. Says the Ramban, that whole prohibition now falls away. Now, if you're freeing somebody or you're giving something, right, it comes up a lot when you're around December 25th, right? How we give our mailman, our garbage man, our bus driver, all our gifts. It's because we understand we're not stomp just giving a gift. We're giving it because we want to make sure they continue to provide the service they did provide. That's really the heter, the permissibility to be able to do those things, which under normal circumstances would have certainly been in a violation of a biblical prohibition of lo sechanim. But here, you're freeing the guy not because stomp you're letting him go. You're freeing him because you want a minyan and you want to do a mitzvah. That's the greatest reward, that's the greatest opportunity you have before you. And so therefore, says the Ramban, that wouldn't be a problem of giving a free gift. And if it's not giving a free gift, then the prohibition of freeing your Canaanite slave is no longer relevant and therefore permissible. He does add a second reason, which if you've learned the Gemara Brachos, you'd appreciate, that the Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so those of you who come late to shul, listen up, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to shul and there isn't yet a minion, he gets very angry. The king's going to wait for his people in servitude. They're not going to wait for him. So the Ramban says, even if you want to say it's still a derabbanan, and even if you want to say everything you want to say, you clearly see from our Mesorah, from the way in which Torah Shabbat Bet conveys the value of Tefillah B'Tzibur, that you see that we wouldn't want to anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it could be there Rabbi Elazar, consider that of greater importance, even though he'd be in violation of this or Daraisa of Lo'olam Pam Tovot. So in summary, we have a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which should have had more than one concern. They shouldn't have only been concerned about the delay of the Shir Shal Yom. They should have also been concerned about the fact that he couldn't bring the Karban Musaf. Tosa says the reason why the Mishnah was not concerned was because they still were able to bring the Karban Musaf because it was a communal responsibility, this concept of Mitzvah Derab Mshaini. And so therefore, since the Mitzvah Derab Mshaini, that it will override it, any type of communal mitzvah will override it. Where we got that idea from was the Gemara in Brachos, which the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Elazar justified freeing his slave in order to have tefillah b'tzibur. We explained briefly what could be a chakira in defining what mitzvah the Rabbim is. Is it a mitzvah that the Rabbim is essential in order to fulfill the mitzvah, or could it even be any mitzvah that the Rabbim as a whole is obligated in, even if it means each one of us fulfilling it on our own? And then to circle totally around, to understand that while it's certainly easy to understand the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, where you have Musaf, which is a Doraisa, and Korban Tamid Shel Ben Arad, which is a Doraisa, so you throw the public communal responsibility and it overrides it, it was a little bit more difficult to understand when it comes to the Gemara in Brachos, and how Tefillah B'Tzibur, which on the surface level is the Rabbanan, that overrides the Doraisa of Olam Bahem Tavodu, and we gave a couple of reasons, either the name of the Rosh, that Kiddush Hashem is also Doraisa, and that's why you're allowed to do it, or because, as the Ramban said, Olam Bahem Tavodu is only predicated on the concept of giving a free gift, and here he wanted to have the minyan, so he was getting something in return, and so therefore lo'olam hem tavodu is no longer relevant, which allowed Rabbi Elazar to be able to free his slave. Have a nice night.